So at the beginning of Perek Shlishi, we have the third group in the Mishnah of psulos. That's the case of chayve krisos, and that begins with haba al achosa. So this is on Chav Tes Amud Aleph in the Mishnah, and besides haba al achosa, which is clear enough, we have the case of haba al eshes achiv. So let's just quickly review eshes achiv. It cannot be literally that the woman that he had this relationship was the wife of his brother, meaning that she's still married to his brother, because that would be a case of chiv misa, and that would be eshes ish. Hence, it must be that although she was Ashes Achiv in the past, he subsequently gave her a get, or he died, and he left no children. Now, when we say he left no children, we pointed out it means he left no children from a previous marriage, because from this marriage, he couldn't have left any children, because that would make her into a Ba'ula, and why would there be Knas? Now, we have another question. When we say that she was married to his brother, was it after Erusin alone or even after Nisuin? And that leads to the following issue, that if it's after Nisuin, then many Rishonim apparently maintain that she's already a Ba'ula, even if Eidim would testify that they never consummated the marriage and she's a Basula. Erusin per se makes her into a Ba'ula al-Pi Din. Rashi says, Eishes Achiv Shenis Kadsha Loli Achiv. So there was only Kiddush, there was only Erusin, Vigirsha. And then he divorced her. Once he divorced her, there's no Yibum. She's still a Basula. And it's only a Chiyuv Karis. Because Eishes Achiv, Shalom Bakum Mitzvah, is a Chiyuv Karis. So the Mishnah is Machadish, that we don't accept Rav Nechunya Ben Akada. And Chayve Krisus does not knock off the Chiyuv Mamon here, and therefore he pays Knas. But now we come to another issue. And the problem is, to whom is he paying Knas? And this depends upon two versions in Rabbi Akiva. One is in the Mishnah Lamed Vav and Beis, the other is in a one is in the Mishnah Lamed Ches, and the other is in a Braisa. On Lamed Ches, as to whether or not she's still in the reshus of her father, even after she was married off to someone else. Do we have more ksubas here? Next one.
There.
Thanks. I'll borrow it and give it back if you need it. I just said my ksubas only goes halfway through this parak. Okay, so let's just quickly see if we can find this. Narosh and his arsov and his garsha. So the Mishnah here records a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, Ein lo knas. Rabbi Akiva says, Yesh lo knas uknosoli atzma. So what it means is the following, that according to Rabbi Akiva, if she had already Erusin, that's enough to take her out of the reshus of the father, even though she was divorced from her husband, from her Orus. But this divorce does not bring her back into the reshus of her father, so she remains an independent reshus. Hence, Knos Aliatzma. That's Rabbi Akiva. This is on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. Ches. I'm sorry, Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. Now, the situation gets a little bit more complicated here for the following reason. and that's Rav Papa. So let's explain where Rav Papa is coming from, and then we'll try to see this inside. The problem is that there's a din called Rodef, and Rodef means a man who's pursuing a woman and she's an Issa Kares, and his goal is to have a relationship with her. So in such a case, the halacha is that you can kill the rodef, and if while he's a rodef he destroys kelim, he doesn't pay for those kelim. So in the case of knas, in the third category of our Mishnah, the group of Isurei Kares, why is there knas since he's a rodef? And you could offer many different answers to that question, but Rav Papa's answer is that the reason why this what undermines the law of rodef here is the fact that we're talking about mafuta. And in the case of mafuta, since she agrees to have this relationship, that's not called a rodef. So for that, again, we have to analyze the sugya in Sanhedrin of Ayin Gimel and that Ayin Shom. Now we have the issue of how to square this with Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva says, Knos Aliatzma. Rabbi Akiva says, Nis Arsav and Nis Garsha, she leaves the Rishus of her father, now the Knos goes to her. Well, if the Knos goes to her, then in the case of Mefuta, that should be an automatic Mechila. So basically, this is a review of what we did yesterday, and leads us to today. What we want to study today is the question of the relationship between Mefuta and Mechila. Does in fact, the fact that she agreed to this Bia, does that halachically constitute a mechila? If it does, then we're in deep trouble with Rav Papa, because Rav Papa was boxed into a corner in terms of how to reconcile this mission with halacha of rodev, and his only solution to that problem was by introducing mefuta, which neutralizes the halacha of rodev. But at the same time, it introduces the issue of mechila, because if it's a mefuta situation, and we're assuming like Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah, again, there are two versions of Rabbi Akiva, but in this version of Rabbi Akiva, Knos Aliatzma, well, if it's Knos Aliatzma, which means the father's out of the picture, then Mefuta should be Mechila. Let's just go over the basics. As long as the Knos goes to the father, if the Torah earmarks the Knos to the father, then she certainly has no rights to be Mechila, and that's the parasha Mefuta. She has no rights to be mochel on monies that are earmarked by the Torah for her father. That's not her money. She's not in the driver's seat to be mochel. But if we knock off the father here, and we do so because she was already nisarshav and nisgarisha, which according to Rabbi Akiva means knas aliatzma, then mefuta is a real serious problem. So to reconcile Rav Papa with Rabbi Akiva, again, I'm talking about Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah, is a real headache. And what we're going to see today, believe me, there is the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi is going to give us various mahalchim in this context. All right. So Yechiel, let me just ask you, what's the last? Because you don't have this on your screen, this Mishkanos Arom, right?
No, but I scanned some of it. So,
so what's the last page that you have? Just because Sammy was very kind to photocopy in case you need for today's shiur. Right, so do you have pay and pay aleph? That's the question I wanted to ask you.
No, I think the last one is where I scanned.
So here you can scan it from. Sammy made a photocopy.
Thanks.
So we're all literally on the same page. Okay. So again, at this point, we're finding the following mutually exclusive contradiction here. We cannot seem to maintain Rabbi Akiva's position of Knos Aliatzma in the case of Eishes Achiv, with Rav Papa's, Rav Papa's interpretation of that Mishnah as a Mefuta case. Because if it's Mefuta, then Lechora that becomes a Mechila. And if you'll tell me what every case of Mefuta should be Mechila, the answer is it can't be a Mechila because of the father. But in this case, that we've knocked the father out of the box, and the reason for that is because Nisarsim and Nisgarsh, according to Rabbi Akiva, is Knossel Yatzma, then how could it possibly be that we're talking about a Mefuta the way Rav Papa has it, because Mefuta is Mechila? That's where we're stuck here. We're stuck with a head-on collision between Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah and Rav Papa. Where is Rav Papa? Rav Papa is in Masechta Sanhedrin on Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Beis. So now I'm going to put this Gemara over here for a minute, and we're going to take out the Mishkanas Aroim. The last paragraph that we got up to was Vitirtzu Atosvis, which is on Daf Ayin Tes on the left side of the page.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I meant to say Ayin Tes. Now this sequence of paragraphs, before we get to the bottom of the page, which is Os Tet Zayin, is addressing another aspect of this whole sugya, and that's the case of Baal Bito. The case of Baal Bito, if you recall from yesterday's discussion, the Mishnah excludes Knas, back on Daf Lamed Vav Amud Beis, but for what seems to be an unnecessary reason. And that is, Mipnei Shemeschaya B'Nafsho Kim Lev D'Rabbi. And this seems to be superfluous and unnecessary. Because Dal Mihachi, in the case of Baal Bito, who's going to collect the Knas? If you're going to say that Knasa Leaviha, well, what does that mean? That he's going to pay himself a Knas? And if, on the other hand, you're going to tell me that she's going to collect the Knas, well, if we're talking about a case of Mefuta, and Tosus has a very strong agenda to assume that according to Rav Papa in Sanhedrin, we're talking about Mefuta, because otherwise the Mishnah should have mentioned the case of Chai V'Krisus, because the Mishnah wants to say the nation is Chai V'Nafsho, so then Chai V'Krisus would have been enough for that, because we're talking about a Rodev. Hence, we have to come to Rav Papa's conclusion that we're talking about Mefuta, and that undermines the din of Rodev. So if that be the case, that if it's Mefuta, then she can't collect the Knas either. So we have a Mimonafshach situation, and the Knas seems to fall between the cracks. It cannot be his Knas for the father, because he was the Ma'anis. It can't be her Knas, because she was a Mefuta, and she was Mochelis. So here's where Tosus introduces a case of, if you see inside, Kishabo Aleha Ad Shalom Meis Umeis. Now what that means is that if at the time of the Be'ila there was a possibility of collecting the Knas, again, even though it was the father himself who was Boel, but at this point we see the Knas as a halachic entity, and this Knas is now transferred over to the Isha, then since the Knas at the time of the Be'ila was collectible from the Yarshim, and the father ended up dying before Gmar Din, but there was a Knas, and now she, the Anusa, in this case the Bas, she can be Tover from the Yarshim her Knas. And we end up with this kind of middle situation here. You know, it's neither hers nor his. What do I mean? It's not his because he's not going to pay himself. It's not hers because she was a Mefuta, and therefore that would itself constitute Mechila. So we're going to have to go back to assuming that it's his. But the only problem is that when we get to Gmar Din, then there's no collection of that Knas. But before the Gmar Din, there's a possibility of collecting that Knas. And in the event that he dies, the actuality of collecting the Knas is going to be from the Yarshim. So she is really, in effect, collecting the knas from the Yarshim based on the chiv knas that was directed towards the father. Again, we have to really iron this out. But let's go to the next paragraph, Od Kosvu Atosus. He says that Lamai di Omer Bishalmi de Mefata Eno Potter Elami Boshes Upagam Abel Knas Eni Chol Limcho Osi Shapir. We've been assuming as a given that in a case of Mefuta, as far as her rights to collect the Knas, she is Mocheles. Well, Yushalmi questions that premise. In fact, Yushalmi rejects that premise and comes to the conclusion that the entire concept of Mechila, in the case of Mefuta, whenever you find it, is only relevant to what's called Nizke Chovel, Nizke Chavola, like, for example, Boshes Upagam. But it's totally irrelevant to Knas. When it comes to the Knas itself, there's no such thing as Mechila. And therefore, we can assume, in the light of this Yushalmi, that Knas Oliatzma, which is Rabbi Akiva Shita in the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Ches. And again, why is it Knas Oliatzma? Because he's out of the picture. Because that's Rabbi Akiva Shita. Ah, you'll ask me, but if we introduce Rav Papa, which we were forced, we were compelled to do so, we're talking about a case of Mefuta, there should be Mechila. And the answer is, we have this principle, again, we're going to spend a lot of time trying to understand this principle, called, in the Yerushalmi, called Lo Mahani Mechila B'Knas. There is no such thing as Mechila B'Knas. Now, the way Tosis formulates this, the issue of Mechila B'Knas is a machlokas between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli. The Bavli, in fact, accepts that the element of Mechila in the case of Mefuta is not limited to Boshes Upagam, but expands to include the Knas as well. If that be the case, then we're still left with our problem, how to reconcile Rabbi Akiva of Knas Aliatzma with Rabbi Papa of Mefuta. But if, on the other hand, you take the path of the Yushalmi, that Lo Mahani Mechila B'Knas, then even though the father is out of the picture, nevertheless, even though it's a mafuta, as far as knas is concerned, she has rights to collect the knas because lo mahani mechila b'knas. So, for the balance of our day today, we want to study on daf pei and daf pei aleph. What is the underlying logic of this Yushalmi that lo mahani mechila b'knas? So, in the paragraph that starts on the bottom of your page ayin tes, he first tells you where to find this Yushalmi. The Yushalmi is in our perek in Halacha Zayin. On the Mishnah, later on Daf Lamed Ches, it says Yisomash in his Arsim in his Garsha Ha'ones Chayev Vamafate Potur. So it means that if we talk about a Yisoma, the father is out of the picture, and now she, in the case of, let's say, Eishes Achiv, was in this Arsa of Inis Garsha, she can collect Ones, but she can't collect Mafata. She can't collect for Pitui. So at this point, you and I would say that the reason for that logical distinction is because of Mechila. In the case of Ones, clearly it's against Hadas, she was not Mocheles. But in the case of Mefuta, there was a Mechila. So the Yushalmi right away asks the question, Amai, why is there a Mechila? And here we have to underline the next line, V'chiyesh Adam Mochel Al Dover Shelo Bershuso? Is it possible for a person to be Mochel, something that's not in their Rishus? This reminds us of a universal principle called Ein Adam Makne Dover Shelo Baliolam. In other words, if I haven't purchased the cow, I can't sell it to you. Because as far as I'm concerned, the cow doesn't exist. I don't have ownership over the cow. The Gemara seems to be, in the Yushalmi, applying a similar yardstick, a similar kind of rule to the case of Mefuta. How could the Bia, when she has Bia, and she doesn't Birtsona Midaita, how could that be considered a Mechila? At this point in time, there is no Knas. So it's not like she can be mocheles on something that's hers. Let's say, for example, I lend you $1,000. So I had $1,000. Now you owe me a chov. I can be mochel on the chov. It's a dover bershusi. I own that shibud. But in this case, you're going to tell me that her agreement to the maisa be'ila is itself a mechila. A mechila on what? On a knas? Where is that knas? The knas doesn't exist. Maybe after the be'ila it exists, but at this point she wants to collect her knas. And the Yushalmi quotes a Mishnah on Daf Mem Aleph Amid Beis. The Mishnah establishes that ein adam zocha b'knas ad hamad v'din. That the moment of time when this chiv knas emerges is the moment of hamad v'din, which means that at this point the knas is like a non-existent entity. How could she be a mochelis on something that doesn't exist? If at the time of hamad v'din she would say I'm being mochel, that's one thing. But she now is in hamad v'din; she wants to collect her knas. But she admittedly or by consent, consented to have this be'ila. But that can't be a mechila, says Yushalmi. Why? Because it's a non-existing chov. When is the chov going to merge? With Hamad Abedin. So you can't be mochel on something before Hamad Abedin. Now this Rabosai has to be connected to the sugya in Makkos. Because the Gemara in Makkos says that any chiyuv knas is created by Bezdin, so that before Hamad Abedin there is no chiyuv knas. If I can trouble you, I think on the table it should be a Gemara Makkos. Yeah, you have a Gemara Makkos. Yeah, I'll read to you the Gemara Makkos again. We'll get back to the Mishnah Saroim in just a minute, but I just wanted to sort of illustrate this point that when it comes to a knas, it's a non-entity until Hamad Abedin. Okay, let me just find this here for a second. Give me a second to find it. The Gemara is talking about the knas of a ganav, which is kefel, or sometimes it's even tovach u'mochar and he's chayiv dal vehe. So the Gemara establishes here on Daf Heyam and Aleph le'inyon tashlume knas. Bo shnayim v'omru b'chad b'shavsa ganav v'tovach u'mochar. So the first pair of Edim testify that this gneva, etc., took place on a Sunday. Ubo shnayim v'omru b'chad b'shavis imonu ayisem. What's that called? Azoma. Elo, but they continue. Betray b'shavs ha'ganav u'machar. On the second day of the week, on Monday, that's when this took place. So the Gemara establishes mishalmim, that we apply the principle of asisim lo kasher zomam lasos liochiv. In other words, even though the second pair of Eidim mazimim agree that Reuven is chayiv to Shimon kefel, etc., nevertheless, since the Eidus of the first pair was subject to Hazoma, then we apply the principle of Kasha Zoma. V'lo od, el afilu omru bi'erev Shabbos gana v'tovachu mochar. So now the second pair of Edim say that the chiyuv of gneiv of kefal, etc., preempted your date. So it means, l'chora, again, this is a pedagogical move that I'm making, that already at the time that the first pair of Edom testified that the chiyuv of Gneva for Kefal, etc., emerged on Sunday, already at that point, this Reuven, the accused, was chayav, even according to the second Edom. The second Edom hold that he was chayav for Gneva, because they now testified that the Gneva took place on Friday. So the Gemara gives the answer. Why is this so? Why the first pair of Edom held guilty for Hazama? The Gemara says, "De be'idna de kamasid gavra la bar tashluminu," because at the point that they testified, he's not chayav. Now wait a second. This doesn't make any sense. Again, I'm just pedagogically, if you follow me. Let's say, for example, Reuven destroyed Shimon's table. So he's chayav as a mazik. Now, if the Eidim testify that Reuven broke Shimon's table on a Sunday, and then the Mazimim say, no, he broke it on Friday, there would be no din of Hazama, because this accused, this Reuven, was already chayev on Friday. So the Eidim are not coming to be Mecharish Achiyuv. Again, you could always ask, maybe there were two different tables, but let's say there's only one table. You know, it's black with red stripes and so forth. Well, the answer is, says the Gemara, that here we're talking about knas, we're talking about kefel. And in the case of kefel, the Gemara says, akati gavro labar tashlumini. He's not a gavro who's chayev. When is the chiv going to be established? Only when Bezdin establishes the chiv. Herein lies the difference between mamon and knas. In the case of mamon, if he was already guilty of this crime of mazik, before the testimony of the first pair of Eidim, namely on Friday, then they weren't being mechadish a new chiyuv, there's no kasha zomam. But in the case of a knas, the chiyuv is not determined by the gneva itself, as far as kefil is concerned, but rather by the hamada bedin. And the hamada bedin took place much later on, let's say when the Eidim came in, the second pair of Eidim came in to testify. In any event, I'm just using this Gemara to illustrate that Knas works in a very unique way. The Maisa Machayev is not enough to establish the Chiyuv. Bezdin's job is not just to clarify that there is a Chiyuv, but rather to create the Chiyuv. It's like Eidus L'Kiyum Adovar. So therefore the Zechiyah and the Knas is only with Hamad Abedin. Until Hamad Abedin, there ain't no Chiyuv. So how can you be mochel on a chiyuv when that chiyuv doesn't exist anymore?
Yeah.
So the final maskon of the Gemara in the Yushalmi is that this is a plukta between Rav Mana and Rabbi Ovid. Rabbi Mana says that mafata is potter min hakol af min haknas, not just the chiyuv mamon of nezek of pagam and boshes, but even as far as the knas is concerned, since she was a mafuta, the knas is gone. We don't know why. We understand Rabbi Ovin, the name of Shammai, he svir lei dehadik tani mafuta patu who rak mi boshes upagam aval chayav beknas. So again, if we accept Rav Shammai, then we could really begin to reconcile Rabbi Akiva on Daf Lamed Ches with Rav Pop in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Enoch Inami, we're talking about Mefuta, and when we say that she collects money, we're talking about Knas, because there is no Mechila on Knas. It's a Dover Sheita B'Shuso. And that's the Shita Rabbi Yovan in the Yushalmi. She doesn't collect Boshes upagam. The Gemara over and over again says that mafata is a mechila. That's only as far as boshes upagam, because boshes upagam is not knas, it's mamon. And if it's mamon, the chiv emerges with the action of chavola. In this case, the bia itself is considered a chavola. Again, it may take a long time until we can clarify that with evidence in Bezdin and force the boel to pay boshes upagam, but the chiv is absolutely complete from the time of the Be'ila, and therefore Hamachila is meaningful. But in the case of Knas, where the Chiv only emerges later with the decision of Bezdin, then Hamachila is a Machila on a Davashen of Rishuso, hence she collects Knas. And that would be a way of reconciling Rabbi Akiva with Rabbi Pop, according to this sheet in the Yerushalmi of Rabbi Ovin. What we're stuck with is trying to figure out the sheet of Rabbi Mana. Now, first and foremost, let's try to understand Rabbi Mana on a logical basis. How could he hold that there is Mechila? And that's in the next paragraph. He says, "Time of the Mandi Omar, we understand very well, Rabbi Ovin, Eini Yechol Limchol Knas Mishum Dein on the Mochel Davashen Bishuso. Aval Time of the Rabbi Mana Lone is Bayer Bishalmi." And this opens up a whole literature in the Rishonim, whether it's the Ramban, whether it's the Ran. The Ran gives two approaches to this sugi Rabbi Mana, and then the Mishloah Melech has his take on it, the Ketzel Sachoshet has his take on it. That's what we want to study today. Again, so right now, if you wanted to give our Shira Koteret, the title of the Shira would be to try to understand Rabbi Mana and counter argue against the principle of Eino de Mochel Dover Sheder Rishu. So how can we reconcile Rabbi Mana, who establishes Mechila in the case of Mefata, Mechila on what? On the Knas, when the Knas is a non-entity at this point, it's only going to emerge later on at the time of Hamad Abedin. So we'll start with the Ran. This Ran is later on in Daf Mem, and he quotes the Ramban. Mistavro commandi Omar sheyichola limcholo knasa. The logic weighs in with Rabbi Mana. Afal pishalo zochsa bo adayin. At what point is she going to gain zechusim in the knas? Only after what? Hamad Abedin. Dolamaze dome. I have a sugya, says the Ran in the name of the Ramban, and I would like to compare our sugya to that sugya. Kosev la rusoso din udvarim einli b'nechasayich b'chayich ubimosech. So this is sugya later on in Masechta Ksuvos, and the case is when a person makes a declaration. Look, the truth is that once a man is married to a woman with nisuin, with chuppah, he gains rights to her possessions during her lifetime. Let's say in nixay malug, he gains rights to what's called the peros, and in nixay tzombazel, he even gets rights to the guf, to the kark itself. But let's just simply take a case of nixay malug, right? So the apartment, she owns the apartment, but he rents out the apartment, and he gets all the rentals. After she dies, he inherits her. And that's a great machlokes later on in Masechta Ksuvos, whether Yerushas HaBaal is Doraisa or not. The Pasuk says She'ero. Let's assume Yerushas HaBaal is Doraisa. The man makes a declaration before Nisuin, and he writes on a shtar, Einli bin Chasayich, both Bechayich uMosech. And basically he's being mochel his rights, A, to collect the rent from her apartment, B, to inherit her after her death. And the Gemara comes to the conclusion, which again seems counterintuitive to everything we would have said about Eino de Mochel B'Dover Sheder Reshuso, did they say to Yarsha that his Mechila effectuates a valid Mechila as far as Yerusha is concerned, how much more so Bechayech as far as Achilas Peros of Nixay Malug. Now, what is the logic here? You know, in a sense, we're jacking up the question. We didn't understand how the Mefuta could be Mochelis on the Knas, which is a non-entity. Now, the Ran is saying, well, let's compare it to the case of Ein Libin HaChasayich. How does Mechila work in that case? Because once again, until she dies, there's no Yerusha. So the Gemara formulates the following principle: Nachla abolo liodam imakam acher odam masna leshalo yirashena. That a person who has a right to inherit someone, he can make a tnai even during the lifetime of his future morish that he will not inherit that person. What does it mean? Nachla abolo imakam acher sheachshov eino roila. Right at this point, he doesn't have rights to the Yerusha. Kigon. One example would be our case here in the Gemara on Pekimel, the case of Arusa. He doesn't inherit his wife. Oh, I forgot to point out, which you all know without me, that if she dies after Erusin, he doesn't inherit her. She'ero means only after Nisuin. So her father will inherit her. But after Nisuin, he inherits her. But now at this point, he's only an Arusa. He's an Arus. So it Lechora, it's what we call Nachla Mimokam Acher. Mimokam Acher means that it's futuristic. So it's like investing in futures, right? That right now he doesn't have any rights to inherit, huh? I don't know what the word zoo is. I think that's a misprint here. Take out the word zoo unless you can figure out what the word zoo is. Ulafuke Yerushas Aviv Shehira Uyalo. Okay, now this is a sugya in many places in Shas, mostly at the end of Bava Basra, about Yerusha. When does a son have rights to be Yorish's father? Is it only after his father dies, or even during his lifetime he has rights to the Yerusha? For example, can he sell his futures in Yerusha? But here in this case, it's clearly a future because he's only an Arus. But in any event, the bottom line is that the Gemara's conclusion is Nachla Bolo Le'olim Mokom Ach. I mean, he's not yet married to her, he's only an Arus, and yet Masna Olel Shalo Yirashena. And after she dies, he doesn't inherit her, even though there was Nisuin. So the answer must be that you could be mochel on something that's a future, that is going to come into existence as a right for you to get this moment in the future. Right now, you don't have it. It's eino re'uyelo. It's yotzem irshuso. And yet Mechila operates. Says the Ran, in the name of the Ramban and other Rishonim, this is going to be a major breakthrough, a precedent, yeah, that's the word I'm looking for, a precedent for our case of Mechila and Knas in the case of a Mefuta, that you see that Mechila is a new kind of a concept. We always assume that Mechila doesn't work because it's not Pershuso, and that in fact is the Shita Rabbi Ovin in Knas in the Yerushalmi here in Ksuvis, but that's not necessarily the Sugya in the Bavli, and that's not necessarily the opinion of Rabbi Mona in the Yerushalmi. Their opinion was that even if there's a future, you could be mochel. Now again, before Erusin, let's say a man is about to marry a woman, and he says, he writes her a shtar, Dinu dvarim ein li menuchasayach b'chayeich u'vosar misoseich. That for sure is invalid. He hasn't even married her yet. That's already a future of a future. We're going to try to break this down into more precise scientific terms, but that's already a future on a future. So for example, if a woman would say to a man, well, if you rape me, or if you seduce me, I'm mochel the knas, that for sure wouldn't be meaningful. But if when the knas is now beginning to emerge, it's still a futuristic knas, it's not pershus until I'm mona bedin, but already at this point there is the fledgling seeds of the knas, then there is mechila. You'll ask me, it's still roi, it's not together zochoi, right? There's no zechus yet. The chov hasn't emerged, it's only roi, but it's enough roi to allow for a mechila. Ubir divrehem. Now here at this point, I don't know, he doesn't quote a footnote, so I'm not sure if this is his own interpretation. He says, Nehi delo mahani midin mechila. Okay. So here, Rabosai, we're going to introduce another lumdisha concept here, a distinction between what's called mechila and siluk. Mechila could only work on a chov. If you owe me money and it's collectible now, I could be mochel l'chov. Mechila doesn't work on a future chov. But there is something called siluk. Siluk works on not on mamon. You can't be mesalik yourself from mamon. So let's say I owe this table. Can I make a declaration? I'm mesalik myself from this table. That's impossible. I need a makna, hakna. It's mine, and I have to be makna it. So that's what we call.
No yeshes.
All right, ask me about Yeish in just a minute. I'm sorry, my head is not up to Yeish. I just want to try to see if I can understand the difference between Hakna and Siluk. So again, Rabosai, Siluk would not work when I own something. If I own something, it's Gufo Konui Lo, I have to be Makna it. And that requires a positive Hakna. Siluk is just a removal. It's like a negative. And what Siluk does is it removes a zchus mamon, not a gufo kinyan mamon, but a zchus mamon. So if I have a zchus mamon which hasn't yet concretized, meaning it's not yet tangible, but ultimately that zchus will give me rights to gufo mamon, I can be mesalik myself from that zchus, and that's a case which here in this particular context is paradigmic of a zchus. What happens is, let's take the case of Yerusha. The Arus, although he doesn't have what we call ro'ui, I mean he doesn't have any sort of a kinyan in the Yerusha of his wife, because he's only an Arus, and therefore he could not at this point sell his Yerusha rights in his wife's possessions. He's only an Arus. But nevertheless, he already has a Zchus. it's what I call a seed. You know, you plant a seed. The seed hasn't even grown yet, but you have a seed. With Erusin, as the first stage in marriage, he's not yet She'erozu Ishto, but he already has Chusim. And these Chusim will materialize if and when. But if he nips it in the bud, since we're talking about seeds, and he says, I want to be masalik myself from those zechuyos, meaning that those zechuyos should never materialize, that he has the power to do. Let's read it inside. He says, Bir divrayim dinehi delo mahani midin mechila, because you don't have an actual kinyan here, adain lo zofsabo, v'eino de mochel dover she'eino b'shu, so mechila only works on something that you have a kinyan on. Now that kinyan again could be a physical kinyan on a material tangible object, or it could be a kinyan on a chov, but that chov is also considered tangible according to halachos. That could be mochel on a chov. Here he doesn't have the chov, or for example he doesn't have the yerusha. Mikomakom, this is what we want to underline. Mahani midin siluk. There is a halacha called siluk. The Adam Yachal Salik Atzma Mikol Schus Sha'omedes Lipolo. So again, I don't know what he means by the words Omedes Lipolo. I think he already has that schus now, but it means that that schus is contingent on all sorts of conditions that have to materialize. Do we have a Gemara Bava Basra here by any chance? I'm probably not going to find what I'm looking for, but if I have a Gemara Basra, I would show you there's a Tosfos which Rav Soloveitchik understood as siluk. Tosfos doesn't use the word siluk. So let's just again summarize here. What the Ran is saying in this interpretation is that although it doesn't make sense for a mafuta to be mocheles on the knas, thank you so much, because that knas is only going to emerge as a kinyan mamon with hamada bedin, but already with the maisa be'ila, what emerges is a schus. And when the Yerushalmi, quoting Rav Mana, says that she could be mocheles, and that's exactly what happens in the case of mafuta, what it means is that she's a mocheles on her schus to collect this money bidin, with her mother bidin. So already, we maybe we could differentiate in the following way. I just want to just see if I can. Just one second. Is it this Tosus here? How this vision just misses. Okay, let's see if I can find what happens over here. We have Cheskis Gimel Shonim. And what happened? He did not what? He did not make a macha. Is Islam the name of the machallah? Oh, so the Mari, he has a principle. Let's just see. I'm not sure if I'll remember what the Rav said here, but I'm going to give it a shot. Of Chazaka She'ini Matayim. So what happens over here? You're living on my land for 3 years, and that gives you a chazak, but in this case, you admit that it's not yours. So usually what we understand is that the chazaka of eating achilles peiros for 3 years, that's a proof that you in fact purchased the land. But you're not claiming that you purchased the land. So the Gemara says that if we derive cheskas gimel shon from shor muad, which is called holchei usha, does this ring any bell? Then, even in the case of chazaka she'eini mataina, we should say havi chazaka. Why? Because each one of the 3 years of achila is compared to one of the three negichos. The shor now, after three negichos, goes through a transition from shor tam to becoming a shor muad, and henceforth will pay nezek shalim. He says the same thing should apply in the case of three achilos. If each three achila, each one of the three shnas achila is considered like a negicha, then this sadeh now becomes his. Alama Tnan, the Gemara asks, Kol Chazok Hashini Matayno, Ein Chazok, if Holcha Yusha are right, and we're going to derive Cheskes Gimel Shonim from Shamuad, then Chazok Hashini Matayno should be valid. Tema says Tosis, my Salkadak to Maksha, Hechi Matsu Ukli Diyodeh, if he's admitting that it's not his karka, that he's a squatter, and we have a marakama, you know, clear-cut owner here from Sheshis Megracious, it was his Achuzas Nachla, then what's the Havamin to say that the fact that he ate Paris for 3 years is going to give him ownership over the karka? The Eshlomar, so Tosis wants to say in his first answer, that since the original owner was silent for 3 years, is Havile Mechila, the Islam of Meir de Mochala. So Rav Soloveitchik was very bothered by this teretz, and he says that's why Tosis offers another answer to this question. And he's going to say that the Mechila is only on the Achilas Peiris of 3 years, because technically speaking, if the chazok of the masik is not valid to prove his ownership, because by his own admission it's not his karka, then he's confessing to 3 years of achilus peiros of gzelum, he has to return those 3 achilus peiros. So now Tosfos wants to suggest that what the Gemara is trying to argue is that lehevi chazoka insofar as paying back for the peiros. And now Tosfos says that's where mechila plays a role. That even though you stole my peros, I can be mochel on those peros, and haray, I didn't say a word for 3 years. So the Rav wants to say that why did Tosis in his second answer reject the first answer is because he can't be mochel on karka. I can be mochel on a chov, but not on karka. Herein is the difference between a chov and gufo mama. The karka itself is gufo mama, requires a full-fledged hakna. I can be mochel you my karka. I can be machne you my karka. But in the case of peros, we're talking about a chov. Right now you ate 3 years worth of my peros. You have to pay me for that as a mazik. And on that, mechila could work. And the Ktsos HaChoshen, if I'm not mistaken, tries to reinterpret this Tosfos. And he tries to say that Tosfos, in his first answer, didn't really mean mechila. What he meant was siluk. And to my mind, you know, this Ktsos might be very relevant to what we're about to study now about Siluk. Now, if you're up to the paragraph that starts Ubepashtus, he says that if Siluk works in the case of a Yerusha, then Siluk, according to this mind, the Omer Rabbi Mana, could work in the case of Tashlumik Knas. So we have, number one, the paradigm case of Bi'oda Arusa, and he could be Masalik himself. And even though he has future Zechuyos in Hanachasim, by virtue of the Erisin, he could be Masalik himself in those Zechuyos. And she now, after the Bia of Pitui, she has Chusim to collect Knas. Again, those Chusim are only abstract Chusim. They will not materialize and become a chov until we get to Hamad Bedin, but there already are zechusim. V'chein mashma me'aktzos
achoshen. If you don't have, if the knas itself is bevel shelo bel yom, how can it be a zechusim something that's a shelo bel yom?
Because a zechus means that everything is set in motion, meaning the sivas achiyuv is there. Once the Sivas Achiv is there, the Torah says, I'm going to give you a Zechus. You don't own anything. It's not in your Rishus. You can't sell it to anybody. But you do have the right to remove yourself from that Zechus. So immediately with the Bia, she has Zechusim to collect Knas. Again, at what point in time do those Zechusim mature and become tangible as a full-fledged Chov? Only with Hamad Bedin, because we're talking about Knas. But once the Zechus that she has to bring him to Bezdin, adduce evidence that he did what he did, that Zechus lends itself to something called Siluk. It means like this. Imagine these two hands. This hand is giving something over to this hand, and this hand removes it, pulls back. That's called siluk. Siluk means I want to give you something. The Torah says I want to be mezakeh you with rights. You know, you now have a little coupon that says that if you use this coupon carefully, you have rights to collect. And now you say, I don't want that zchus. Thanks, but no thanks. So he says the following. There's a Marit. The Marit says the following. This is amazing. A person has a schus, and he's misalik himself from the schus. Can he rescind his siluk? In Mechila, once you mochel something, it's impossible to remove your or void your Mechila. Once Mechila is chal, the chov is gone. It's history. But what about the case of siluk? Siluk didn't really accomplish much in real terms because the siluk was only on an abstract schus. So there's a Marit. The Marit lives, I think, about 6 centuries ago in Spain, if I'm not mistaken. And he maintains that a person could be chozer, but we could backtrack from a siluk. So, for example, in the sugya in Ksuvas Daf Pei Gimel of Arus, he was misalik himself from the schus. Says the Marit that up until the moment of Nisuin, he could decide to rescind and void his siluk. After Nisuin, that's already too late. Why? Because after the Nisuin, the zchus now transfers over to the Isha. But up until the Nisuin, where the zchus is in the hands of the Arus, at this point in time, even though he was misalik the zchus is not gone. It's sort of like locked up in a closet, but if he wants to take out the zchus from the closet and free it from its captivity, he can be chozer bo, as long as she wasn't zoche in his zchus. So with Nisuin, when the zchus is about to materialize, now she has a Nisuin without his zchuyos. Do you follow? She marries him with a different kind of Nisuin. It's not the classic Nisuin which the Torah or the Rabbanon, if Ksuv is the Rabbanon, whatever it is, would be mezakeh him with zchuyos within the context of that Nisuin. So she has to give up certain ownership rights in the context of Nisuin. And those ownership rights will express themselves, for example, in Achilles' parents of Nechzei Meluk. But now she says, well, he was misalik himself. So if he's misalik himself, I'm going to take over that zchus. And now my ownership over the peros is going to be complete. At that point, he can't change his mind. But up until that point, he can change his mind. Says the Ktzos, I'm going to take this marit, and I'm going to apply it to the case of Mefuta. In Rabbi Mana's perspective, Rabbi Mana recognizes siluk. Then she was misalik herself from the knas. But now, according to the Marit, she could be misalik herself from the siluk. She could be mevatel, or shall we call it chazara from the siluk? The lidvarav gam benido didan tuchala isha lachzor me'asiluk ad shas hamod bedin. With Hamada Bedin, the Chov emerges, and if there was a Siluk, then we're not going to establish any sort of Chov. But up until the point that the Chov emerges, then she could remove her Siluk. Veholesa says the Ktzos, that's not true. Siluk is irreversible. The Lahalan Daf Lamed Beis Amid Aleph Muki Hashas Vasnis and Demakas Be Yisoma Mefuta The Leke Knasu Boshes Pagam Mishum Hachi Loke. That because there's no Boshes Supagam and also there's no Knas, so he gets Malkus. Okay, this has to do with the sugya of Ein Adam Loke Mishalim. So in a case where there's both Malkus and Mammon, one of the two. Again, one man the Omer holds, you give a Malkus and you don't pay Mammon. The other man the Omer says you pay Mammon and you don't get Malkus. So the Gemara assumes that if there's not going to be any Tashlume Mammon, for example, in the case of Mefuta, then he gets Malkus. How can we give Malkus? Tomorrow she's going to say that she's misalik herself from the Siluk. She was Choseres Ba. In other words, the Siluk really didn't accomplish anything up until Amar Bedin. Because according to the Marit, Siluk is only a temporary kind of concept, and you can remove the Siluk. How could the Gemara say that we can give Malkus based on the fact that she was Misalekas as Atzma from the Knas, and if there's no Tashlumei Mammon, the Mela there's Malkus? Well, she really wasn't Misalekas, it was only on a temporary basis.
Well, when did you become Chayav Malkus? Wasn't that a Amar Bedin also? I mean, he based it to be Chayav Malkus. that doesn't come automatically just because whatever act he did. I mean, there has to be a basin. And that's the same basin that would establish the knas.
So wait, let's go through this. I hear your question, a brilliant question. Let me just think. After the pitui, so now the question is, does he get malchus? So what we're saying is that if he's going to pay the knas, then that patters him up from the malchus, because ain't on the loka mishalim. Oh, so we're going to say that since it's a case of pitui, we can give him malchus. And why is that? Because the pitui is a mechila, or as we called it, a siluk on the knas. So there won't be any knas. So he doesn't have that option. Oh, so let's see. Let's fast forward to Amudah Bedin. So we're now at the point of Amudah Bedin. So Gemara says if it's Amudah Bedin, in the case of pitui, he will get malchus. So you're saying that's even according to Marit, that point in time is already after the point of no return, that she cannot be choseris bar from the siluk, because it's after Amudah Bedin. So when we give him the choice, and we have to decide whether to impose a chiv knas or to give him malchus, it's one or the other, they're mutually exclusive. So at that point in time, she wasn't misaleka, so therefore there's no knas, and then we're gonna impose a chi of malchus, and therefore there's no possibility of chazar even according to the Marit. Even according to the Marit, Zakati. What does he say here? Zakati ha-mechuyev mamin. Even after the siluk, because she can be choseres ba, is amai loke. Why should he get malchus? At what point is there going to be malchus that has to be after Amudah Bedin? That also might depend on this sugya in Masechta Makos. I already closed this. Let me just look one thing. How does it work with malchus? If the Edim said that he was mechuyev b'malchus on Friday, and the first pair of Edim said he was mechuyev b'malchus on Sunday, so I think Tosfos addresses this in the second. I'm sorry, I don't remember the sugya. Pirsha Kunshav the Moda Mifto Nira Kati Lamings of Bo Eden Zhayev Bechadam Shamans of Bo Eden Zhayev. Where's the Tosfos? There's a Tosfos here about Malchus, which I don't remember where it is. Ah, Tosfos about Malchus. Okay, then I'm feeling to my little boy. Oh, man, Katachas Neregis. What's the case over here? And she looking at you, and she did. You Malchus, and then thought there was a Tosfos here about Malchus. Evil Eden. And Bosh Naimyom Vichad Bishab Sahari Plonius and Nefesh Bosh Naimyom Ru Imanua Yisem Bechad Bishab Sahari Boss of the Trade Shabs of La Oda La Filu Yarla Katolu Akati Gavro La Bar Katolu. So, where's the case of Malchus? Ficha Nipsik Sakhim.
Okay,
Tashlume Knas. Now, what about Malkus? I don't want to say something stupid here, but I, if I wasn't afraid of saying something absolutely stupid, I would say that in Malkus, he becomes a Gavra Bar Chiyuva from the time of the Avera. Right? Or does that depend on Abai Verov, about whether Lamafreya, and if so, let's just think. Is he Chayv Malkus? So let's see. This should be the first Mishnah in Sanhedrin, actually. Let's just see. The Mishnah talks about Malkus, right? Let's see. What was the case of Malkus? Is there a case of Malkus here? How come I don't see that? It's got to be right in front of my eyes. Oh, here it is. Makis v'shlosha, mishum Rabbi Shmuel omru v'esrim v'shlosha. Yeah, no, you're right. You need a bezdin for Malkus. Right? That's what it means. That the Gemar Din is a Gemar Din of a bezdin. What kind of bezdin you need is a machlokas tanoim. So bezdin is going to be gomer es hadin. So what is the ketzos's problem here, you're asking? Do we have a ketzos maybe to look up in the original?
I'm looking at it now. So you want a printout page? It's a
Simon Yud Beis,
so I have
all Simon
right here.
Sifkat Yud Beis in Simon Reish Tes.
Yeah, Reish Tes.
Can you just like sort of skim it for a minute with your eye, while I try to rack my brains on this, and see if he addresses that possibility? Because you know that's not something that the Ketzos would miss up on. You know, it's a mathematical cheshbon here. The Ketzos is accusing. He's accusing the Marit of contradicting the sugya on Daf Lamed Beis with regard to Malkus. That what the Gemara says that since she's a case of Mafuta, therefore we give him Malkus. Frekti, but maybe she'll be Choseres from the Siluk. But what do you mean? We're talking about Malkus now. So if we're talking about Malkus, it's already too late for her to be Masalekus. Now he must know this, the Ketzos. He doesn't mention this? No, nothing there?
I haven't seen it.
It's very long? Is
it all fits on one page, one printout. It's half of a page.
Half a page, like 20 lines or something?
No, more than that.
More than that. The Ketzos is not known for being very brief. There's some Ketzos in that just go on and on. You know, that's why learning the Ketzos is a pachad. So let me give it one more shot over here. Again, if there's Avmona B'din for Malkus, then what does he mean that she could be Masalik herself from Michozerba from the Silu if it's already after Avmona B'din? Yeah, I'm just wondering exactly. In the time scale, the timeline, how exactly the sequence works. So what happens? Like at the last, you know, can she come along? And is this what the Ketzos is accusing the Marid of saying that Lechora at the very moment we're about to give him the first of the 39 lashes? At that moment, she can come along, and she can be one second. She can reverse her siluk. One second. If she reverses her siluk, then how can we give him the Malkus? The Gemara says we give him Malkus. The Gemara doesn't hesitate about the Malkus. But according to the Marit, we should be very inhibited about giving Malkus because she could be Choseres Bo from the siluk, in which case she collects the Knas and he doesn't get Malkus. But maybe the answer is that Fakeret, since we're talking about what? We're talking about Hamadah B'din. So at that moment, let me get this straight. At that moment, she loses her ability to rescind Hasila. Gandik, I'm just wondering exactly, you know, when is the red, when's the point of no return here? Just, you follow what my mind is muddled. I'm confused about when is the point of no return. Let's just think. Bezdin bring the two Aiden, right, and they testify on this Maisa of Pitui, and now there's going to be a Gemara Din. So let's say up until the Gemara Din, l'chor is it's a twofold Gemara Din. Is that how it works? You know, Bezdin is going to have to paskin simultaneously on two issues. Number one, whether this Be'ila is a Be'ila of a lav, let's say Hasra, and so forth is Malkus. And two, whether this Be'ila generates a Chiv Knas. So that's like it's a package deal. So how could she rescind her Siluk? Now it's already after the Eid. Well, let's say Vatikumar Din. Yeah, I don't know. You're right. It doesn't make sense because how could the Ketos say it's already, you know, how could Ketos say that the Malkus here is up in the air? It's already too late for the Siluk because the very moment that Bezdin is going to impose Malkus is already after the Chiyuv Knas has been established and at this point she already gave up her rights to collect Knas. Because she was Misalekas. I mean, how would the Ketzos envision a Siluk after Malkus? There could be no Siluk after Malkus. It's already after Hamad of Adin. I don't know. Yeah, you see, if you would have asked that question to the Rav Shia, the Rav probably would have spent 3 hours trying to figure out an answer to that question. I can't allow myself that luxury because I don't have 3 hours. Yeah. So, Bli Neder, I'll try to go. This is Sifkat Yud Beis, right? That's the one here. I'll just make a circle here. But let's go on because there's a lot of exciting stuff here that I had on the agenda for today, and time is really ebbing away. He says the following. Ulam, he wants to reformulate this in a more precise way. And he says the following. Yesh lefarish di ein ha-siluk me'amomon. Don't think that what Rabbi Mana is saying, and the Ran is saying in the name of the Ramban, is that there's siluk on momon. Ella hasiluk hu shelo yachul din tvias knas.
By the way, I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah. But as I read that paragraph again, it didn't read to me that this is the Ketzos he's quoting. It's his own extension of what the Ketzos wrote by the case of a woman with marriage at that point.
Oh, you mean the Ketzos doesn't even mention it?
I'm reading the Mishkan Saroma. He says, Dilid Dvarav, Gamed Nidam Nidam.
Oh, but I do see here, I'm just again looking with one line, he says, Mashikosa Marit.
Yeah, no. But in the case of Achas Nisun, he's talking about whether she can be Choser or not in the Schus. And he says, well, a woman can be Choser, maybe you have the same problem here with the case of Mefuta. But that's, I think, him talking, not the Ketzos. I don't think the Ketzos talks about the case of Mefuta at all.
Oh, there's no case of Mefuta in the whole Ketzos.
And I think it's Mishnah Zeron that made that extension.
Oh,
I see. And we asked him, not exactly.
There is a footnote missing here. That's why I pointed out before. Anyway. All right, I can't handle all of this together, but I just wanted to point out here that at this juncture, he's introducing a new interpretation here. We were speaking about the schus of the mefuta to collect knas, and we were saying that since she had ratzon and she consented to this action, that constitutes a siluk on hazchus knas. Now he's introducing a slightly different curveball here, and he wants to say that there's some sort of a schus tvias aknas, which means that If, let's say, you damage me, but your shor eats up my vegetables, so now I have rights to be tovea you in Bezdin. And there's a whole sugya about when I, under what circumstances, what conditions, give me that zchus tvia. But if I'm not tovea you, then there's no way I can get that money. I need to be to tvia is a chal shem. There are many halachas that are built on tvia, like you know the tovea l'keyeshlo. Tvia gives me a right to demand that you respond to my tvia, and if you refuse to do so, then it's Hodas Baldin. Those are all the laws of Tvia. So what happens is that with the Maisa Bia of Mefuta, she doesn't have a schus in the Knas. That's already premature. But what we're talking about is a schus Tvia Saknas. That's already a little bit earlier. And on that, you can be Masalik yourself. Now the Nafkamina is as follows. If you're talking about a schus in the knas itself, then the ktsos might be right against the marit that once she's mesalik herself from that schus in the knas, that's geendik, that's finito. You can't reverse that siluk. But in this new interpretation, maybe we could begin to understand that according to the marit, there is such a thing as Chazar from Siluk. If the Siluk is only on the Din Tvia, why? Because there's no Siluk on the Knas itself. And Fakert, it's too early to have a Siluk on the Knas. The Knas is a Dorashen of Bershuso. It's like a non-entity. But what is an entity, and that emerges with the Maisa Bia, is what we call a Schus Tvia. And on the Schus Tvia, she could be Mesalik herself. But that's only on a temporary basis, according to the Marit. The Ktsos might argue, I don't know, this is already just guesswork, that perhaps there's no chazora even on a schus tvia. Now, exactly how this parallels the case of the Marit of Siluk Mi'arusha, the Sugin Ksubis, that I don't know. Because Lechora, The concept of Yerusha has nothing to do with Tvia. I mean, that's either you are Zocha in the Yerusha or you're not Zocha in the Yerusha. I mean, Bezdin has to make that determination. But, the Siluk here in the case of Yerusha would be a Siluk of Mammon. I don't know why it's a Siluk. I don't think it's parallel to a Siluk on a Zchus Tvia. Okay, now, let's fast forward to Od Kos of Haran. Because what we're going to see in Od Kos of Haran is the possibility that Rabbi Mana is not talking about Siluk at all. And everything that we've been saying is to be put on the back burners. And this might be a whole nother approach as to how to understand the concept of Mechila in the case of Knas of a Mefuta. The Ode says the Ran, the Kevan Shenisratzeis Peshas Bia, Ech Yischaev, Harehu Kaomer. Now the paradigm case is no longer the Siluk of Ainli, Dinu Dvar Ainli Benuchasayev, but rather Krashi Raim Shali Vehi Poter. A person says to his friend, rip my clothing and you won't have to pay me damages. And that's valid. And if his friend goes ahead and rips his garment, he doesn't pay as a mazik. Here too, she says, go ahead and have this beer with me and you won't have to pay the knas. The afal gav di ena zocha b'knas ad shas hamor b'dimikom akom b'shas beer hu mischayev. If there's an action that generates a chiyuv, and that chiyuv is kind of a chiyuv to someone else, again, it goes back to our original question whether the chiyuv of knas is a punishment for him or it's a zchus for her, right, to pay the victim. So, but let's assume it's to somehow compensate the victim. So the maisa bia generates a chiyuv as a kind of a mazik. Well, I can tell you, go ahead and do this maisa, and you will not be chayev to reimburse me or or to compensate me for any suffering that I suffer as a result of the Maisa. And in this second approach, the Ran says that we're going to accept the sheet of Rabbi Mana, because just like we accept the sheet that Omer Krashi Raim Shalavi Potter is Potter, so too, if this is parallel, then she could say, be boel me and be potter from the knas. Why? Because the be'ilu itself generates the knas as a kind of payment or as a point of compensation. She could say, go ahead and do this maisa to me and you won't have to pay compensation. So we're not going the route of mechila, we're not going the route of siluk, but rather we're going the route of a maisa machayev, and a person can say, I'm going to accept that maisa without the chiyuv, meaning I'll be passive in and victimized without the chiyuv. Now he says that we have a machlokes achronim as to how to understand this word v'od in the Ran. And this machlokas achronim revolves around the Mishnah Lamelech. The Mishnah Lamelech, he tells you in number Kuf, is to be found in Perkov Gimel, Milchus Ishus Halocha Aleph. And the Mishnah Lamelech says the following, Nireh, to call Hakol Tam Echad, the Ran did not mean to come up with a second explanation. It's all about Siluk. It's all about the first answer of the Ran. But the Ran wants to come and give extra teeth and strength to his first answer of Siluk. And he adds the Havale Ka'omer Krashi Raim Shalivi Potter. That also is a kind of Siluk. Why? Because this Maisa of ripping my Shiraim gives me rights and schusim to sue you for damages. I am now giving up those rights by being Masalik myself from those rights. And that's what the Ran says. This is a very, very radical case of Siluk. Because keep in mind, he's already being misaling himself before the Kriyas HaShirayim. So that's what the Ran means to quote from this case of Kriyas HaShirayim is Afal Gav Di Eino Zochu B'Knas Ad Shas HaMod B'Din. Well, what about the case of Kriyas HaShirayim? He certainly is not Zochu in the moment of the Mazik until after the Hezek has taken place, yet he can already be Masalik himself from the future Mammon that he would collect when the Maisa Hezek takes place. So that's one approach to the second Ran, meaning the Viod in the Ran, that the Viod in the Ran is nothing more than a continuation or he calls it an alimus, you know, alume taima kama, the first explanation. And now he says the following, that in the Gemara on Daf Pei Gimel, there the siluk is after erusin. There's no siluk before erusin. Now, in the case of knas, the case of knas should also be a case like siluk after erusin. But on that, the Ran answers that b'shas bia, at the moment of bia, the chiyuv is there. It's mamish like the schus of erusin, and therefore siluk could be operative. The ha'inu the kol chiyuv shebo liyodav al-yidei maisa, is when the maisa is implemented, there's already a schus to collect money for that maisa. Va'lo potro, and now the victim of that maisa can alleviate the oses ha'maisa from his chiyuv, which would be engendered by that maisa. It's aval pishal on ischayev befall at amod bedin, but already there's a maisa machayev, and already at that maisa machayev there's a siluk. And Dima Haran Lekrak Susi Vipote, the Kfar Hushayef Bachiv. At the moment of the Kriyas HaShirayim, there is a Chiv. And on that Chiv, there is a Siluk when he says, Vihipoter. So this fits in very well if we assume that the Siluk is on the Tviyas HaKnas. That was his second take on it. Therefore, once there's a Machayev of Bia, at the moment of Bia, she, the Neveles, the Mefuta, now has a Schus Tvia. She can be Misalekes Es Atzma from that Schus Tvia. And that's going to be similar to the Schus Tvia that the that the Baal is going to have in his wife with regard to the ksuba, and the schus tvia of a nizak in the case of Christ, ksusi, but it's all one answer of siluk. But then we get to another line in the Mishnah Lamelech, and here the Mishnah Lamelech takes an entirely different approach to the Ran's V'od. And he says the following, Od kosef shav Mishnah makavonis aran debishas biyahu mischayev. What does that mean? The bishah she omed bedin chal achiyuv l'mafreya mishas bir. So there's a process here that extends over two stages. Stage number one is the maisa bir, and the stage number two is the amada bedin. And even though we don't clinch the chiyuv until the final moment of amada bedin, but once that is done so, then the chiyuv is already clinched at the time of the maisa machayev. So that the amada bedin is only to concretize or finalize the chiyuv that's inherent or latent, if you will, in the maisa bir. This is a pretty wild idea. And if you ask me, I would accuse the Mishnah Lamelech. don't take me literally, because I'm not a flea on the back of the Mishnah Lamelech. But what I mean to say is that this is a misuse of the concept of Lamafreya. Whenever you have two Maisim, and you need the second Maisa, we're not going to apply Lamafreya. Lamafreya only applies when the first Maisa is a full-fledged Maisa, and then there's a separate Tanai. But Hamada Bedin is not a Tanai. Hamada Bedin in Knas is going to create. For example, if you would apply the principle of Lamafreya the way the Mishnah Lamelech is applying it in the Ksugyat Makis, then the Edom would be off the hook. Because the second pair of Edom say that the Maisa Machayev of Gneva took place on Friday. Now, if we're going to say that the Hamada Bedin is next Friday, but it were next Thursday, right, and it works Lamafreya, then it turns out that already on Sunday, when the first pair of Edom test, that's why he was a Gavr Bar Chiyuv. We never apply the Mafreya. You know, I have an axe to grind there, because I think that out there in the world there's a tremendous popular misuse of the word Mafreya. Mafreya is very few limited cases where the Gemara applies to Mafreya. And every case of Mafreya is what we call Tnai Dover Acherhu. When the Tnai is something external to the Maisa, that's called Ola Mafreya. Because the original Maisa, like for example, Ariat Mekudeshes Li, Betabazu, Me'achshav, Im Titni Li Masayim Zu. So she gives him the Masayim Zu a month from now, but he says Me'achshav, that's called the Mafreya, because the Me'achshav indicates that everything is inherent in the original Maisa. But be it as it may, again, who am I to argue with the Mishnah Lamelech? And the Mishnah Lamelech wants to apply the mechanics of Lamafreya to the case of Knas, that Hamada Bedin is only the clincher, but after the Hamada Bedin, the Chiyuv was established Lamafreya from the time of Be'ilah. Hence, Rabbi Mana in the Yushalmi could apply the principle of Mechila in Mefuta, and you cannot counter argue how does the Mechila work on a Dovah Shein B'Shuso, so once we have Lamafreya. Ulefize, he says on the fifth line, he says, Shnei Tamim Hem. Tama Rishon Vidun Siluk. And that's going to generate a Ptur Knas. And when he says Viod, it means Inami. He's giving a second answer, and that's not Midin Mechila, but rather Midin Mechila. And if you'll ask me how this Mechila on a Dovah Shein B'Shuso, Lo Chashivi Mochil Dovah Shelo Bo Liolam, came into the Yachna Amoda B'din Chalachiv L'Mafreya Mishas Bia. And all this is explained by the Bnei Yaakov. Nice name. I have to get a hold of Friedberg. Apparently he was a pretty early Yachna, this Bnei Yaakov. Okay, there was a shul in my neighborhood in Flatbush called Bnei Yaakov, the Bnei Jacob Synagogue. Probably every major city in the world has a Bnei Jacob Synagogue. All right. He says, because of the Lefize, Hecha Shenosan Lo Kli Lamashkon Aleknas, go to Mamon Abedin, Chal Shivin Mashkon. Unbelievable. Basically, what he's saying is, in the name of the Bnei Yaakov, is that she can sell her Knas, her rights to the Knas, from the moment of Be'ilah. Why? Because it's not a Dovah Shel Ba'olam. She owns that Knas. Only when there's Hamad Abedin, but it works Lamafreya. So, for example, She can set up a mashkon, and the boel, you know, who's the ma'anis, the mafata, he can give her a mashkon. She's kona that mashkon even before amud bedin, because that shibud will be chal through the mafreya. It's like the sugya of Abai Rava in Pesachim. Were you here when we discussed Balchov Lamafreya Ugova? I don't know, right here in this room? I don't know. Anyway, that was the sugya of Pesachim. Vaktos Achoshen, Gamkein Ozil Beshita Zu, the Shnei Taimim Hei Baran, Atamarisha Mishum Siluk, Vatamashene Mishum Mechila, El De Poligal HaBnei Yaakov. Oh, see, again, I don't know if he's going to mention the Bnei Yaakov, I don't know, but at least conceptually, he argues with against the Bnei Yaakov. Dili achar amod v'din chalachiv mafev lochoshiv dorish lo boliola. He says it's impossible. You cannot apply the principle of dorish boliolam, and it's a full-fledged mechila. Li olam lochshivi dorish lo boliolam ad amod v'din. Ulak noso li acher is bevade eni yechola. That's impossible. Lo chal shibud mashke. So what does the Ran mean if it's a second explanation? The kema the ikra chiyuv hu al shas bia the melo kishen isratzes lebia veleka chiyuv midaita the midaita ovid is su leka chiyuv knas mishas hamor bedin. Whole nother understanding of the Ran. And again, according to the Ketzos, I don't understand the Ran's equation here to Kras Ksusi, but let's just understand first what the Ketzos is saying. This is my Yom of Alayla, a whole 880 degree turnaround. The Ketzos is claiming that the Ran's second approach is that the Chiyuv depends upon the Shas Bia. It's true that the Chiyuv itself doesn't emerge, it's a Dov Shalom Baliolam until Hamad Abedin. But that Chiyuv depends upon the Bia. What kind of a Bia? Well, a chiyuv mamon is going to depend upon a bia which is payable, so to speak. What do I mean by payable? It's punishable. It's a kind of a bia that deserves his knas, that he has worked hard to deserve his knas. But if she was nisratzes labia, leka chiyuv, that kind of a bia doesn't generate a chiyuv. Why? Because that's not called a, as far as, again, dinim mamonis is concerned. I'm not talking about other dinim like marriage and so forth. But as far, and maybe malchus in the case of an isa, that's not what we're discussing. We're just discussing the monetary element of knat. If you focus on that monetary element, there are two types of bia. There's a bia without nisratzes and a bia with nisratzes. If there's a bia with nisratzes, that's called midaita ovid. If it's midaita ovid, then there's no chiyuv knas. So forget about amod abedin. I don't even have to introduce amod abedin. We're not talking about mechila. We're not talking about siluk. All that is gone. What we're talking about, rather, is whether this bia generates a chiyuv knas. And there, since she's in the Sratzis Midaita over, that's a bia that doesn't generate a knas. So again, this whole Mafreya business doesn't ring well in the ears of the Ketzos. To tell me that after Amud Bedin, there was a chiyuv already b'shas bia, l'mafreya, therefore she could be mocheles, forget about that. Because if you take that interpretation, which is that of Bnei Yaakov, to its logical conclusion, she should be able to sell her knas from the time of bia. She should be able to set up a mashkon for that shibud of shas achiyuv. Because the chiyuv is l'mafreya. And the Ketzos can't tolerate that. It's certainly a davar shelo boliol. The answer is we have to go back to the roots. And we have to ask us, was there a machayev? Is there something upon which the Hamad Abedin could be based upon? The Hamad Abedin has to be based upon the Shas Bia and the Maisa Bia. Al Shas Bia this Hamad Abedin. But on that Shas Bia, he claims, well, since it's of the Midaita, there's no knas. This is a radical departure from every assumption that we've been operating with. To now assume that it all depends upon Shas Bia as to whether or not it was Midaita or not, I don't know. But I do want to tell you one thing, if we have a half a minute before we have to conclude. I found something in the Chassam Sofer. You know, I've been sort of juggling my time between the Chassam Sofer and the Mishkan Oso Rome. And of course now I'm not going to find it for you, and even if I find it, you seem to have a different pagination than I do. But in any event, if you'll trust me on this, Be'avunas Chachamim, the Chasam Sofer claims that there's no knas in the case of Mefuta. Oh, I finally found it. For a whole different reason. And he says, because of the principle of Lo Tehei Chote Niskar. This is pretty wild. So I'll read to you the language. Again, I apologize because it's only in my photocopy. It's page 8. And it's Dibra Maskel Habba Alachoso. And he says the following. He says that even though the Yerushalmi has one opinion that she can't be Mocheles Alaknas, and therefore the Knas is going to be paid, he says Kasha. He says, I don't like it. Kaven, this is the language of the Chasam Sofer. Kaven dimeritzona avra al iser lav. So he's specifically honing in on the case of psulos. Is amai niten lo knas? There's no way that we can give a knas. Again, if she was an anus, that's a whole different story. But if she was a mafuta, if we give a knas in a case of a violation of a lav, tehe chote niskeres. That's the language of the Chasam Sofer. I underlined it here. Therefore, near the Enochinam Bechai Gavna, in a case of Mefuta, Lekuliyama, less Laknas. Umasha Kosam Yushalmi, the Mefuta Yesh Laknas, Hainu Dafka Bekcheros. That's only if there was no Psul, there was no Avera here, and therefore there's no Din of Chote Niskar. But Naris Psulos, whether he says it's Chayve Lavin, Chayve Krisus, etc., Ein Lashum Knas. That is a pretty radical position of the Chasam Sofer. So if you want to look at that and find it in your paper.
Right.
Oh yeah.
This is the more reading here. This is the actual Shiloh of the Maritz, if you want.
Oh wow. Okay.